And joining us today on Perspectives is New York Times bestselling author Nelson DeMille. Nelson has written a series of books, and I'm sure that you're familiar with a majority of them, but the most recent is a John Corey novel, Radiant Angel. And John Corey, if you all are familiar with Nelson DeMille, this is a pretty neat guy, and I want to wait and talk a little bit with Nelson about this, but I want to thank you for joining us, and thank you, Nelson, for taking the time to be with us.
Thank you, Louis. Good to be with you.
Now, as I mentioned, this is a John Corey novel, and for people who may not be familiar with your work, and I'm sure they will after this, John Corey is a very interesting character, and I just love the way that, he's cocky, he comes across with stuff that's not politically correct, and that's why he has to take that sensitivity training that he's supposed to. But why don't you share with us about the development of John Corey?
Yeah, well, that was about 18 years ago. I wrote a book called Plum Island featuring John Corey. And it was meant to be a standalone book because I didn't write series characters. I'd never done that before, didn't want to do it. But I wrote Plum Island, and John Corey in those days was a NYPD homicide detective and wounded in the line of duty. And he was convalescing on the east end of Long Island. And it was basically a murder mystery, and that was his background. And he's asked to help the local police because he's a fairly sharp New York City detective. And that was the end of it. It was a good book, a very big bestseller. But the fan mail that I got about the book and about the character was so overwhelmingly pro-John Corey. They loved this character. Men loved him because he's a man's man, and women thought he was sexy, although he's kind of politically incorrect and makes some he makes some comments that would offend most women. But he's a lovable rogue, and so my publisher said, maybe you should bring this guy back. And I said, well, I don't do series characters, and I did another book, and then I decided, John Corey pays the rent here. He's obviously the book's still selling and paperback years later. So I wrote the second John Corey book, which was The Lion's Game. But John, because he was retired from the NYPD for medical reasons, really can't go back on the force, so I had to find a new job for him. And I happened to know a contract agent who had been also an NYPD detective who got a contract with the federal government, which was becoming common after 9/11, to work with the Joint Terrorist Task Force, which is local police working with the FBI and the CIA in different cities to combat Islamic terrorism, or terrorism in general, but mostly Islamic terrorism. So I gave Corey a new job, and that's how he started his second career, working with the Joint Terrorist Task Force. And his beat basically was Islamic terrorists in New York City, and that was followed by, I think, Nightfall and a few other John Corey books. And so here we are in our seventh John Corey book now, and he's still working for the feds, but he's got a slightly different job within the FBI, which is the Diplomatic Surveillance Group, and they're tasked with following diplomats at the United Nations in New York, and that's what he's doing when the book starts. He's surveilling outside of the Russian mission to the UN on Sunday morning, and he's supposed to follow the Russians wherever they go, and starts off as a routine surveillance, but soon develops into something else.
We're visiting with Nelson DeMille. He is the New York Times bestselling author of a series of books that I'm sure you're all familiar with. Radiant Angel is his most recent novel. The Quest was before that. The Panther, The Lion, The Gatehouse, Wildfire, Nightfall, Upcountry, The Lion's Game, Plum Island, as you mentioned, which is the first John Corey novel. Spencerville, The General's Daughter, The Gold Coast, The Charm School, which is the first one I ever read, and Word of Honor, and The Talbot Odyssey, Cathedral, May Day. Wow, I'm going on and on here. The Rivers of Babylon, even a cookbook, and Rendezvous, Death Benefits. And one of the things that you mentioned about John Corey, in Plum Island, right away, I guess the reader gets the fact that, wait a minute, this guy's going to get this. The guy who's giving him the tour at the lab, John Corey is just going back and forth with these questions that in a classroom, it would probably be an aggravating student who always asking these smart aleck questions. And I mean, people love him because of that. And right away in Radiant Angel, as soon as you start writing, John Corey opens his mouth and he just, there it comes. And you had me laughing in the first couple of pages already.
Well, thanks. Yeah. And I've told John Corey that a little bit. He was a little bit over the top, I think, in some of the books, but he's a little bit more mature now. And it's kind of interesting, too, Lou. You know, when you do a series character, and again, I've never done it before. This is my one and only series. The character ages, and you can't have him age too much. Yeah, the joke was that with Agatha Christie, her character of Hercule Poirot, when he died, was about 103 years old, as best I could figure. And when you can't, you know, create a series character, you start off with a, you know, early middle-aged man, then 15, 18 years go by, you want to keep the guy young. So, and you want to keep the persona the same, and this is hard to do as the years go by. And Corey is Corey, and he's still a detective, and he's working in intelligence work, basically, but he brings his detective skills into this kind of work. The FBI, you know, does a good job, but they have different sets of skills, and CIA is certainly much different, the way they approach a problem. But Corey is a basic homicide detective, and he wants to know who, what, where, when, how, and why. And I think that serves him well, and I think the audience, the reading public, kind of likes the idea that here you have a street cop who's kind of in some ways showing up the FBI and the CIA and the State Department intelligence in this book. And I kind of have fun with it.
And his partner, the one who he's teaching, mentoring, Tess, who wants to be an FBI agent, she's kind of caught off guard at first, but then she just kind of catches on that this guy is the way he is.
He has a new partner now, which is anybody who follows the series knows that John was married to an FBI agent, Kate Mayfield, and she's kind of off camera on this one. She's in Washington on business, and Corey has this young trainee partner who is actually more than she seems. She wants to be an FBI agent, and she's a young attorney, but there's more to her, and he figures this out, too. He doesn't know who she is, and, but I won't give that away. But she is, you know, maybe this is male fantasy. She's kind of taken with him, and as all the female characters are in my book, they're all taken with John Corey. but he's pretty straight. He's a married man, and he's playing it kind of straight throughout the book. But there's this nice sexual tension between the two of them. They're different ages and different backgrounds, and they're both on the same job. And the surveillance details, you sit in the car for hours sometimes. You stand on a stakeout, and you get to know your partner. I mean, I've done the research on this. I know people who are into surveillance. And, you know, sometimes, usually in the old days, the partners were both guys sat in a car and watched a building. But now, a lot of times, it's a female. So you got a man and a woman sitting in a car for 8 hours watching a building, and, you know, the talk turns to whatever it turns to. And I kind of make this clear in the beginning that he has a little patience for her, but he is a little bit taken with her, too, and she's very much taken with him.
And one of the things that I noticed that came out in the book is the fact that I guess people who remember the Cold War remember the situation with, you know, the Russians and us and what was going on in the Kennedy administration. Of course, I was a young lad then when the Kennedy and the Cuban Missile Crisis. But you describe when they're following this guy, you know, John kind of talks a little bit about the fact that this is what the Russians do and this is what the Islamic people do, our enemies, and all this stuff. And it's very different, but it also educates the reader as to perhaps, you know, what has been going on in the past and what is going on now.
Yeah, that's a good point. John Corey, when he's sitting outside the Russian mission, sees the new Russian flag, which is not so new anymore, but he remembers when the hammer and sickle used to fly on the same building. And he says to himself, he kind of misses the Cold War in some ways, but he thinks it's back, and that's kind of sets the tone for the book. And the previous books, he said he's following and dealing with Islamic terrorists, on kind of a different wavelength, and he says he likes following the Russians more because they're more fun to follow, and they go to a lot of bars and nightclubs and that type of thing. And so that's made the job more interesting for him, and hopefully, you know, for the reader also. But also, he says the Russians think like us; they're like us, and we can predict each other's moves, which is good and bad. I think he has some grudging respect for the Russians, where I think he had a lot of contempt for the Islamic terrorists. He didn't think they were very bright. But the Russians, he realizes, are a serious enemy, and he considers them the enemy. And one of the motifs of the book is that the State Department and the various administrations are not taking the Russians seriously enough. And that may be changing now in real life, but for many years we didn't understand what Putin was up to until he seized the Ukraine and rather seized Crimea and then invaded the Ukraine. So I think it's a new world out there with the resurgent Russia, and that's a lot of what this book is about.
Well, a lot of times also, as you mentioned, John Corey is pretty much speaks his mind, not politically correct. And before he was working with the diplomatic surveillance group as he is now, he was with the anti-terrorist task force. But I guess because of his insensitivity to the terrorist, then he was forced to change jobs.
Yeah. You know, I went back to the past book to see, you know, what the story thread was. And as I say, I saw that he was kind of contemptuous of the Islamic terrorists. And but he's had some other problems with not being sensitive to Islamic culture, because, you know, there were a number of immigrants in New York from Islam. And we don't mean to be derogatory. We're not, certainly. But he's had some problems with authority. He's always had problems with authority, and they decided that he would be safer, and the world might be safer if they took him away from the anti-terrorist task force. And they put him in this job, which is diplomatic security, diplomatic surveillance, I should say. And it's considered they call it a quiet end. That's where people go at the last couple of years of their career. But everybody knows that it means a dead end, and this job is going nowhere. Meanwhile, his wife, Kate Mayfield, her career is rising, and she's been made a supervisor, and she's in Washington on business. And so when we first see John, he's been sort of demoted, which is unusual for a hero. And it's sort of like the spy who came in from the cold. He's, like, out there, and all he's supposed to be doing is just watching where the Russians live and work. But there's more to it, and he knows that. He knows there's more to the Russians, and this is supposed to be a routine surveillance this Sunday morning when the book opens. But the Russians are up to something, and he instinctively knows they're up to something. So I think that kind of sparks the storyline. And in very short order, we do know what the Russians are up to. And it's, I won't give away too much of the plot, but it is a nuclear terrorist attack on Manhattan.
We're visiting with Nelson DeMille. Nelson is the New York Times bestselling author of a series of books, as you heard me read a few of them a little while ago. But the current one is Radiant Angel, and he brings us back to the hero John Corey. And John Corey, known as the Panther, and that was a previous book, has left the anti-terrorist group task force that we just talked about, and he's in New York City taking a job with the diplomatic surveillance group. And the book opens up with they're waiting, he and his partner are waiting to follow Russian diplomats working at the UN mission. And basically, as Nelson mentioned a little while ago, he takes us into what is becoming a new Cold War. And as he just mentioned, clock-ticking plot that Manhattan is in the crosshairs. So one of the things that you mentioned earlier about John Corey is the fact that, you know, and I would imagine that perhaps his wife is kind of always walking on eggshells because, like, what is this guy going to do, that, you know, or something like that. And when I was talking to a friend about this book recently, I said, you know, if they were to make a movie about this, I think that John Corey reminds me a lot of Steve McQueen. And I'm not sure if, you know, people might not even remember who Steve McQueen was. Great actor, but he was Mr. Cool, and he just kind of didn't put up with anything and defiled authority as well.
Yeah, and a lot of people have said that too, Louis, that he reminds them of the old Steve McQueen. And more recently, Bruce Willis.
Yes.
Bruce Willis character. And Bruce was actually interested in playing the John Corey character, as was Aaron Eckhart. And so, you know, we're working on that because, you know, people in Hollywood, believe it or not, actually read. And Eckhart had read one of my books and just loved it, and one of the John Corey books. And also Alec Baldwin, who I know a little bit, had read Nightfall, another John Corey book, and he wanted to play the character. And so did Bruce Willis. Bruce Willis actually called me in my office once. So these were three guys who we consider men and kind of anti-authoritarian. And they all wanted to play the character of John Corey, which is good. I mean, that's great when you can get actors, especially top stars involved with the project. That's what we're working on now, but not so much for a feature film, because there's seven Corey books, and it'll be hard to make them as all feature films, and they're not looking at that. What we're looking at is a cable TV series, so we could do all the books in two-hour segments, and there's seven of them now, and if thing is successful, then we would continue the Corey characters with maybe original screenplays that are not based on the book. So that's in the works, I hope.
We're visiting with Nelson DeMille. Nelson is the New York Times bestselling author of various novels, including several that feature John Corey. And his most recent one is Radiant Angel. And it does feature John Corey, who is now working for the Diplomatic Surveillance Group. Nelson, tell me a little bit about, you know, you just mentioned about perhaps television or cable. What about your characters or your stories go to television or to the silver screen, I'm sure that you kind of wonder about what are they going to do? And then the reader, a lot of people are going, you know, read the book first and then watch the movie. But there seems to be a success going on, as you mentioned, in cable, like, for example, Michael Connelly and his Harry Bosch and some of these other characters. And so people are getting introduced by watching the TV show, and then they go and buy the book.
Yeah, exactly, and that's a good example. Michael Connelly is actually a friend, and he created the Harry Bosch character, and he sold it to Paramount for feature film, and they weren't making any of them. And so he got the character rights back, and he turned it into a TV series. And a lot of authors are doing that now because they see that the way to get a series character on the screen has got to be the small screen and not the big screen. And cable is kind of good that you can use language that you cannot use on broadcast TV, and some situations that would not be acceptable to broadcast TV can be done on cable. Plus, you have the luxury of an hour and a half, a two-hour format per book, and whereas, you know, the movies, you got to kind of get a whole book in less than 90 minutes. So we're seeing more of this. A lot of original cable shows out there, too, but many of them now are based on novels that are long-running series characters. And I think it's a good thing because it does introduce the public to, I think, good fiction. And, right, hopefully the whole idea is that they're going to go out and buy the book, but well, that remains to be seen.
One of the situations, Nelson, that people, because of technology, people now have access to books and media in a variety of ways. And, you know, they'll read a book on an iPhone, which I don't know how they can do. They need really a super large font. I would need that. But then there are the e-books, there are the Kindles, there are the Nooks, there's audio books. And so there aren't any excuses for not being having access to a book. And what used to be a 800-page book, whatever, now, you know, you can put on a Kindle and nobody will even know how big that book is. But because it's coming to them and they have easier access, I think that that's kind of raised a little bit of the awareness. What are your thoughts on e-books and also audiobooks?
Yeah, well, audiobooks first. Audiobooks, I think, are good because the way people used to hear stories, of course, before writing and printing was, you know, the great oral tradition of the storytellers. And this is just, you know, somebody reading. Hopefully you get a good reader. I have a very good reader, Scott Brick.
Oh, he's great.
He reads all my John Corey books. And he's really, he brings a lot of life to the to the story. E-books, a little bit different. I'm like you. I have trouble reading e-books, and I've done it, but the access is there, as you say. I know younger people have no problem. They can change the font if you need to, but it is bringing books to people who would not normally have access to books. You know, there's not a lot of there were more bookstores in this country once, and with the closing of borders and a lot of independence, we have Barnes & Noble left. When I was a kid growing up, I didn't even have a bookstore in my town. Neither did I have a library growing up on Long Island when it was semi-rural in those days. But now, books are available to everybody, and I'm pleased that anybody can go on to Kindle or a Nook and pull up any of my books. And if they don't want to do that, then go on Amazon or BNN.com and order a book and have it delivered. You know, we're usually within 48 hours. So it's changed the retail picture, but it's also changed how and when people read. And the big book season used to be the fall around Christmas time, but now the book season is all year long, and I like that. So it's working for the publishers, working for the authors, and anything that increases reading is okay with me.
We're working with Nelson DeMille and conversing with him about his recent novel, Radiant Angel. It's a John Corey novel, and it deals with John being working with a diplomatic surveillance group, and he is his job is to track down or follow Russian diplomats working at the UN mission. And, of course, we don't want to give the story away, but he takes you on an incredible ride. Right from page one, even though they're sitting in a parking lot, he and his partner, it's the action starts right away. Nelson, tell us about what you like to read, because sometimes our listeners are interested in, okay, well, we have these authors, they write books, but what do they like to read when they're relaxing?
Well, you know, that's a good question. I mostly read classical fiction myself. I want to read it all, you know, before too many more years go by. And I like Somerset Maugham and Graham Greene, and I love the old Agatha Christie's and Conan Doyle's. And that's what I read for pure pleasure. But I also read some of my contemporaries to see what they're doing. I don't want to be influenced by them, but I do read Michael Connelly. And you mentioned Michael before, and he's a great writer. And I read Harlan Coben, and I read Brad Thor. And they're kind of doing Daniel Silva. They're doing what I'm doing. In a different way. We're not really in competition. Writing is a very collegial game, I have to say that. And, you know, I think all writers are friends and brothers and all that, and or sisters. And so it's okay that they're bestsellers, because we try to stagger the books, but they don't come out at the same time. And we're all fighting for number one on the bestseller list. But what I do a lot of reading, I have to do a lot of reading for my books to research the books. And a tremendous amount of reading, more than I really want to. But you have to do, it's like researching a term paper or a PhD thesis sometimes. Any novel is longer than any PhD thesis you're going to read. So you really got to get your facts, even though it is fiction. Right now, my next book actually is set in Cuba. So what I'm reading now is The Lonely Planet Guide to Cuba, because Cuba is hot at the moment. And I'm reading that, then I'm going to be reading more stuff about Cuba, and then in October I'm going to Havana to do more research for the book that I'm working on now. And hopefully, we don't have a title yet, but hopefully the book will be out next fall.
One of the things that's happening also is, because of the technology, a lot of the younger people are being exposed to books. And James Patterson has had a big impact on this, because he's reached out to young adults and also donated a lot of money to help independent booksellers.
Yeah. But you got a lot of money, so you can donate it.
Yeah.
Jim does it right for himself. I know Jim also. We're in the same publishing house, actually. And he's a very generous man, and he's done a great thing by helping independent booksellers. He helped out a friend of mine as an independent bookseller. And he's a very prolific writer. He writes not only the Alex Ross series, but, as you say, he writes young adult books, and that's a separate skill that I don't think I have, but he's able to do that. He's written a few children's books, too.
And the Women's Murder Club?
Sorry?
The Women's Murder Club, very popular.
Yes, right. And he has brought reading to a lot of people who would not normally read, and then every once in a while you get an author who transcends, you know, gender and genre, and he's done that, and he's brought people to reading. And from, you know, James Patterson, they'll go on to something else. So I think that's good.
Nelson, as we're wrapping up this program, if you wouldn't mind telling us where readers can go and listeners can go to find out more information about your books. Do you have a Facebook page or a home page that you would recommend?
Yeah, I have a website, nelsondeville.net. And if you go on nelsondeville.net, you can also pull up three chapters of Radiant Angel. And they're free. Just read them. Decide if you like them. If you like them, you can buy the book. And also, there's my publicity tour schedule for Radiant Angel. So if you want to see if I'm in a city near you, you can go on my website. And I'm also now on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, which is new for me. I'm getting into the 21st century and going on social media. And the books, of course, as you mentioned, are available as e-books. So that's another way to get the book, and now you can also get them in audio download, which is cheaper than an audio CD. Some people like the CD, some people like to download the book. So, you know, there's various formats out there, and you kind of got your choice today. In the old days, you didn't have your choice. You had the hardcover, and if you couldn't afford it, you had to wait for the paperback. But now you've got a lot of options, and I think I said that's a terrific thing, too. So NelsonDeville.net will give you all the info, more than you ever wanted to know about me.
Well, Nelson, thank you very much for taking the time to be with us. We truly enjoyed this, and we hope to visit with you again soon, perhaps when we talk about your book about Cuba.
That'd be great. Thanks, Louis.
Thank you. We've been visiting with New York Times bestselling author Nelson DeMille. The most recent book is Radiant Angel. Perspectives is taped and produced at the KTP Studios, University of Texas at El Paso Communication Building. Our thanks to our engineer, DJ Orozco. Our producer is Dennis Wu. You've been tuned to Perspectives. I'm Louis Sines.